I'm Ben Pugh, and you're listening to Impact, Parenting with Perspective, episode 160. This podcast is all about helping parents manage the mental and emotional drama that comes with parenting teens, so they can focus on what's most important, building rock-solid relationships and having a powerful impact on their teen's life. Join me each week as I dive into real tools to help you and your team turn struggles into strengths. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you for listening. Guys, I have an amazing guest today, and I am super excited. I have an idea of what we're going to talk about, but I don't like to plan these things out. Like, I want to be surprised. So I just know this is going to be great. And just stay tuned. This is going to be awesome. I have with me Dr. Leanne Hawken. She is also a life coach, and I think maybe one of the biggest fans of my podcast. Like, you have reached out to me probably the most. So I just want to start out by saying thank you. And I love you. And thank you for listening to my podcast.
Oh, Ben. So I love that you're a football coach. And I, if you need to know that I was a cheerleader for 4 years, both seventh, eighth grade, freshman year and sophomore year. And then I became the mascot the last 2 years. Awesome. I did a 40. And then I went on to teach mascot. I was and I did a 49er pregame and halftime show in an Eagle outfit. So cheering people on has never left my side. And I think that we've talked about this before. It's like, we have to celebrate people that are doing awesome stuff. And you're doing awesome stuff. Here's what's happening. You're helping heal people. But I need to get that out to more people. So that's, you know, you see me sharing your podcast. And bless you for working with teens. Because I am not good at that. I have a 14-year-old. And so every time I hear your podcast, I'm like, bless you for doing this work, because I'm just barely hanging on, you know, that rodeo, like 8 seconds. Can we do 8 seconds today? So I just want to say, I really admire what you're doing. And another reason I want to get on your podcast is like, how do we get this out? If I can get it out to my network, maybe we can get more people listening to the amazing work you're doing.
Oh, thank you. That would be awesome. Yeah. So I know now my favorite part of your background is that you were a cheerleader and a mascot, and that you performed at a 49er game. That is awesome. Tell me a little bit about you. So you're a doctor in psychology. Is that correct?
Yeah. So all of my degrees are in psychology, and I was really fascinated at an early age, probably because I came from a really chaotic home life. I took psychology in undergrad, and I was like, I wonder why people do what they do. So my whole quest in life, and why I got my master's in psychology, undergrad in psychology, master's in psychology, with an emphasis in applied behavior analysis. That's basically looking at environmental events that predict and maintain problem behavior. And then I was a behavior analyst for a couple of years in California. I spent 28 years in California, so a lot of time there. And then I got my PhD in school psychology because I wanted to work in education. So combine education and psychology at the University of Oregon. So I'm a duck. And then I came to the University of Utah and became a professor in the Department of Special Education. So I'm also a Ute. And I did that for 18 years. So I trained general and special education teachers for 18 years. I trained classroom behavior management, or what I like to call classroom instruction, because we don't manage behavior. We instruct appropriate behavior. And I even like to not call it parent training. I like to call it parent development, you know, because we have child development. We as parents need to develop. I'm developing constantly because I have a PhD in psychology. And I need to tell your audience, and I know a lot of parents shame themselves. I mess up every single day. My job, I've been telling people how to work with their kids since I was 24. Okay. So a long time ago. And I have a PhD in this, and I mess up every single day with my kid. And it's just really important for your audience to understand, like, we have a phrase in my family. It's called, when we mess up, we make up. And that involves an apology. I read that in a book somewhere and I just love it. And so the idea is that if we're sitting there beating ourselves up as parents, then we can't show up as our best self. So a lot of the work that I've done on myself to show up better as a parent, and I see this in your podcast, it's a theme throughout your podcast, and I know you're teaching, is that if we don't love ourselves and respect ourselves, we are not going to be able to show up in love and respect for our kids. It starts with us. So, yeah. And then let's see what else. Oh, so I was working 70 hours a week. I adopted my child on my own when she was a baby. She was 40 minutes old. She's the love of my life. She's my biggest teacher. She has ADHD. So the universe provided me with a child that requires behavior support and intervention on a daily basis. And you'll appreciate this, Ben. Lately, I was telling a friend, I feel like I'm running a behavior unit and I need a paraprofessional to support the kind of parenting that's happening right now. I'm like, I'm running a behavior unit at home and I need a paraprofessional. So, but we got some help. I got some help because I'm trying to run a business just like you are. And I'm doing parenting full time. So single parenting full time. So you can imagine what that's like. I know you have a lovely wife that supports you. And I know that she helps with your business too.
Parenting, business. Oh my goodness. She does so much. I don't know how you do it, Leanne. I am very just impressed by you.
Well, you're so sweet. Everybody says that. How do you do it? Okay, let me just tell you. When you are a single parent from the beginning and you set your intention that I'm going to do this, then guess what? It's not, you don't go, oh, I'm sad that my partner's not here, or my partner was here for 4 years and now they're not. When you set your intention, I mean, I was alone with her in a condo in Corpus Christi, Texas, is where she's adopted from. She's a beautiful Latina little girl. Her name is Mila. And I'm there by myself with my little Latina girl. She's just like, and I'm like, everybody was like, that must have been so hard. And I was like, actually, no, nobody was bothering me to try to come see the baby. And I was just like, I got to bond with her. So my intention was, I'm going to do this. And if I'm going to do this, you know how I did it, Ben? I said, I got to build a village. So I called the adoption agency. I said, are there other single women in Utah? And they said, yes. And I said, can I have their names? So we formed single, or, you know, I kind of started it, but it was formed with a bunch of us, single, we call them SWAC, single women adopting children. And so there was like a whole group of us that raised our babies. We still do. I just got together with them. My beautiful friend, Tiffany, hosted. She is a vision teacher, an amazing vision teacher in Salt Lake School District. So she works with kids with low vision as well as that are blind. So she's an amazing teacher. So I formed Single Women Adopting Children. It's like, you can't do this. You know this as a parent and as you're working with parents. If you have kids who struggle, and all of our kids struggle, if you're trying to do it by yourself, it's harder, right? And even if you have like family around or whatever, sometimes they're trying to get their, what do you call it? Their messages and the way they want a parent embedded in your parenting. And that actually makes parenting harder. Huh?
Their agenda. They're like, no, this is how it should be done. Yeah.
And I love my family. Well, both of my parents are not alive, but I love my family, but I don't necessarily want every single one of their, like I have poor parenting models. Okay. So I have to reparent myself and also learn how to be a better parent myself, along with healing my trauma. So, or complex PTSD. So my thing is like, okay, we had some bad models. Do I want those people telling me how to parent, right? You should do this, Leah. I was like, hold on a second. We had bad models. We need to, like, I need to learn what are the good models. How do I show up as a good parent? I've had to relearn all that stuff. And now the field has changed. I got trained in psychology. I started in 1988, probably before you were born. And okay, there you go. So here's the thing. Psychology and the field of psychology, particularly in relation to the field of neuroscience. I mean, in the last 10 years, neuroscience has catapulted the field of psychology because now we know what the brain does. So for example, the podcast that I reached out to you about was about triggers, right? And triggers. Now, the field of neuroscience has come so far. We know what the brain does when it's triggered, okay? And you let me know if you want me to explain. So there's three ways in which people learn. Okay. So this is what I taught all of my students at the University of Utah, because it's really important to understand how people learn behavior. Okay, they learn behavior typically in three ways. One is through classical conditioning, which is what you can think about of Pavlov's dog, right?
Yeah.
So it's basically an unconditioned stimulus or UCS. You know, these psychologists like to make these weird, hard words that make, you know, like it's a foreign language. So I'll probably try to translate and slow me down if I don't do it well. Okay, unconditioned stimulus. So in the Pavlov's experiment, the unconditioned stimulus, it actually started with nurses coming or people going down the hall and their shoes were clicking and they were bringing food to the dogs that they were doing experiments with, right? And they soon learned that, and they're bringing food. Soon the dogs would, the unconditioned stimulus was, okay, these clicking shoes. Well, that doesn't make a dog salivate. But if you pair the clicking shoes, the unconditioned stimulus, but if a dog sees food, the unconditioned response, if a dog sees food, what are they going to do? They're going to salivate, right? Because my dog jumps on me, the whole thing. If it's paired like the unconditioned stimulus, the food, with the clicking of the shoes, pretty soon the dog hears the clicking of the shoes and they start salivating, right? It's that pairing, okay? And then Pavlov went further. He went, hey, I noticed that when you hear the clicking of the shoes, I wonder if I can get him to do it to a bell, right? So pretty soon he conditioned the food with the bell. And pretty soon what was unconditioned, meaning like the salivating, they used to salivate looking at the food. Now you ring a bell. Now they salivate because they've paired those two together. So what questions do you have about that before I go further?
No, I love that. I teach that all the time within some of what I teach. So keep going.
Okay.
That we're all familiar with because we learned that in high school or something. So
keep right. So most people are, but okay. So let me go through the other one. The other one, the way that people learn, and then we'll come back to that because it's really important. And I think it's this distinction between the two types of triggers that we're going to be talking about. The other type of learning, you've heard of B.F. Skinner, right? Mm-hmm. He's a behavioral psychologist. He came up with operant, once again, psychologists try to make it harder and so that we don't think very smart unless we actually begin a PhD or at least a master's in psychology. So operant conditioning is the idea that, you know, behavior is shaped by its consequences. So if behavior follows, if there's positive consequences, right, the kid is more likely to do it. And if there's negative consequences, they're less likely.
Yeah.
If you think about it, when I teach, you know, schools, I work with residential facilities who work with adjudicated youth who have been justice impacted as well as have mental health issues. Kids act out, youth act out for two reasons. So do adults. Think about it. Look at everybody's behavior. We're either trying to get something we want or avoid something we don't want. Okay. Yes. It boils down to that. Okay. Yep. So that's what operant conditioning is. And when you're talking about triggers, what you're saying is, I've been given a stimulus and then I have a chance to respond to it or not. Okay. That's operant conditioning. And now the cognitive, so if you think about Brooke Castile's thought model, hers is basically she has brought cognitive behavior therapy down to the masses. She's done a beautiful job of telling people first, you have a stimulus, Rick, which is a circumstance, and then you have a thought about that stimulus, right? Yeah, about that circumstance, and then you have a feeling, and then the whole thought model. Then you have the actions. That's that. Really, what she's doing is the cognitive behavioral model, and that falls pretty in line with operant theory, except behavior analysts like I am, they don't think of thoughts. They mostly focus on observable behaviors. Now we have a whole new field called acceptance and commitment therapy. By the way, if any of your viewers have anxiety, depression, it's a significant treatment for kids with autism. I've got a good friend by the name of Diane Hudson. She just was in Salt Lake City, but she does a lot of using acceptance and commitment therapy or treatment. It's out of the University of Nevada. Steve Hayes is one that kind of helped develop the research around it. That's kind of bringing more of the thoughts into the operant conditioning and the Skinnerian stuff that started. So that if your listeners want more information about that, we can put some stuff in the show notes. It's very progressive. It's a way that we really should be looking at behavior and not just kind of behavior, the field of behavior analysis started in the 70s. Okay. And we used to, it started because people were locked up in people with mental health conditions and developmental disabilities were in institutions.
Yeah.
And the question is, how do we get them out? Well, they use this amazing, really powerful behavioral therapy. Now, it first started with, you know, they would shock people and they did, you know, so we have this bad, you know, we had this bad, what do you call it, reputation as behavior analysts. Like, you used to shock people. You used to, you know, when I first started, I mean, people were still kind of spanking people back in the day. They don't do that. We don't do that anymore. We focus on the positive. So the two ways of learning, classical conditioning, so classical conditioning, think Pavlov. Operant conditioning, think B.F. Skinner. Okay. And also include in that, it's not the same, but just think about the thought model fitting in there. With cognitive behavior therapy, and think of the acceptance and commitment therapy. Then we have modeling. And a lot of what happens, and this kills me, Ben, a lot of what happens with our teens is that they're watching what their parents are doing, right?
Yeah.
And then the parents are like, don't text and drive. Well, how many of you text and drive? Don't lie. Oh, this one cracks me up. Don't lie. And they're sitting there fibbing on the phone. No, I don't want to go to that party because I'm sick. It's like kids watch what we do. And the thing is, if you like, you know, it's okay. I don't have issues with small lies because sometimes I think that I don't tell my kid never lie. I think that's it's ridiculous. But my thought is, if we're going to model lying, we're modeling lying not to save somebody, because I don't think we should try to prevent people's triggers. Like you mentioned like people are responsible for their triggers. And I believe that's true in operant conditioning types of scenarios, right? In the thought model scenario. Now, if we're looking at classical conditioning, how people develop phobias and how they develop PTSD, say that you've been in a war. Like, I've got two amazing brothers who have served our country as well as my father, but my two amazing brothers have been in combat and have had really significant things. So there are things that trigger them related to, you know, the classical condition. My stepfather, he was in Vietnam. He would see bamboo, his trigger. So his bamboo is neutral. But if you pair bamboo with shots, some combat veterans, and my stepbrother as well, Robbie, hi, if you listen to this, the idea is that these folks had neutral stimuli, such as a helicopter, such as bamboo, such as a smell of a swamp or a, you know, you know, the smell of burning bodies. I can't even imagine. And, you know, that's what happens when you go to war. So they come back home. This thing that was kind of neutral, bamboo. I saw my stepdad drop kick a piece of bamboo because he was triggered. And what happens when you're triggered? Well, we have the neuroscience to know what happens when we're triggered. There's this middle part of our brain called the amygdala. It's our fight and flight, freeze. Yeah. You know, we learned about it. What happens is there is no time. There is no thought that happens between the trigger and the response. Here's why. When you're triggered and it's on the classical conditioning way, your prefrontal cortex, which, you know, so we have the middle part of your brain, the amygdala, and it's like the thing to protect us. You're going to die if you don't do something. And the prefrontal cortex says, no, you're not going to. Like, just think of it as the dog. The amygdala is the barking dog. Like, sometimes dogs bark when there's problems, and sometimes they just bark. You know, like my dog barks, you know, randomly at squirrels. But your brain doesn't necessarily know the difference. So the prefrontal cortex says, yes, they're just barking at a squirrel. It's okay. It's okay. But when you have trauma, and you have that conditioning, like from a war, I was physically abused, and anybody that's been mentally abused, you know, emotionally abused, anybody who's suffered narcissistic abuse, what happens is they get triggered, and we teach in schools, they flip the lid. The middle part of your brain is like this, is if you think of your thumb and you put it in the middle of your finger, the middle part of the brain, that they basically do, they flip their lid, right? Or some people say The amygdala is the barking dog, and your prefrontal cortex is the wise owl. The wise owl telling you, no, no, it's okay, don't be. So if you think about it, have you ever seen anybody that's avidly afraid of dogs, kids, that they've been bitten once?
My daughter, that happened. She nearly got attacked by a dog and broke my heart. She's like four, begging the dog, please don't hurt me, please don't hurt me. And I'm running over there. She was petrified of dogs until we got her a dog, and then
the dog
that she chose.
So she, now if you think about that, she had a neutral stimulus, a dog, and then it was paired with a traumatic event. And it sometimes only takes one. Have you ever like thrown up something from like, and you got
never eat it again?
Exactly. Sometimes it's a one-time parent. But what you did and how we get through this, you know, this is how they work with people who have a huge fear. So phobias are formed this way too. If you have a huge fear of flying, what they do is like graduated exposure. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to take you into the airport. We're going to have you relax. We're going to have you breathe. Okay, go home. Now we're going to have you go to the terminal and get to the gate. Okay, breathe. You're not even going to get on the plane. You're going to do your relaxation. You breathe. So it's called graduated exposure. I think that, I'm not an expert in classical conditioning. I teach it, but I'm not expert at all the words when it comes to describing it. But the idea is, it's like we exposed them to the stimulus. And so you exposed your daughter to a dog that was friendly, and she was able to like uncondition herself, or, you know, you guys were able to help her uncondition because you brought the stimulus in and made it a friendly thing. Right. But she's probably still afraid of other dogs in some capacity. Would you say, like, what if they bark really loud? Or
So here's the experience. So she was probably afraid of dogs for, I don't know, 5 years. And my family, they all have dogs, and she wouldn't go to cousins' houses because they would have dogs. And so we were like, Logan, we don't want you to be afraid of dogs. Like, if we were like at a park and there was a dog off in the distance, she'd be like, I want to go. I want to get in the car. So we had been like, we talked before we hit record, and anytime I put out into the universe, like, hey, here's my intention, I want to solve this, the universe is like, hey, here's the solution.
I love that.
We were like, man, you know what? I think to help you, maybe we should get a dog. And so my daughter would start looking for dogs with my wife, and I find a super cute dog. And she's like, I want that dog.
Nice. So she has some say and into in her own therapy, which is really beautiful, by the way.
Yeah. So we got this cute little dog as a puppy, and I hate minis. I hate the little tiny dogs. They seem to
the glorified cats. You mean the glorified cats?
Yeah. So we got like let's see. He's a mini Bernedoodle, but not like the size.
Those are cute.
A 30, 40 pound dog. Like, he's grown up to be pretty big. And she just loves that dog. And now she loves the cousin's dogs. And when we go out and there's a dog that comes up to her, rather than being afraid, she'll approach it and be like, hey, can I pet your dog? Like,
has there ever been a dog fight in front of her? I wonder if she would be triggered by like a dog.
Yeah, that's fight because the time. So there we were at a lake and a dog jumped out of a van window and was attacking her, and this is like, I almost went into like kill mode. I was
mad.
Like, I'm running over to the dog.
There's nothing worse.
I'm gonna kick the dog or do something, and then
and it's hard to get him off the people too. That's what's hard. Yeah,
yeah. And then the dog owner comes out and yells at my daughter, and like, he was the next one, and like, there were other people at this lake that were like, dude, you need to take care of your dog. You need to leave. And due to social pressure, like, he's tossing everyone out. I'm like, oh, just ruining my fishing day. And it's like, your dog jumped out of the car and nearly attacked a four-year-old child.
Like, yeah. Anyway. That kind of dog needs to be put down, to be honest with you. That is unacceptable. I get really frustrated with dogs. But I want to circle back to, so when we talk about triggers, if you think about What is your daughter's name? The one that got tired. Logan. Oh, I love that name. Okay, so Logan. Now, if you said to Logan, you're responsible for your triggers. It's like, no, she's not. She's not responsible. So I think you said that on your podcast about triggers. It's like, she is not responsible for these people who are not managing their dogs. Now, if she, so that's the difference between classically conditioned, like fear and stuff. And then say, for example, I'm trying to think of an analogy is like, say, for example, you trigger me by your podcast, right? I kind of listened to it. I'm like, huh, that's not the way I see it. So you gave me a circumstance. Like, I'm like, Ben, we got it. You gave me a circumstance about talking about triggers. And I thought, huh, I think we need to have a discussion. I could have thought that guy doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to the classically conditioned. That didn't even cross my mind because I knew that you always want to show up in love for your audience, your people, your clients, your parents. And I knew that if I could have a discussion with you, you'd be like, okay. So I think that's the thing is like, that's why I want to have this discussion. It's like, let's separate the triggers that have been that, you know, from like PTSD, because somebody should not like put helicopter sounds in a Vietnam vets, you know, people who do that kind of stuff. Like, I know that, you know, they are triggered by the sounds of helicopters. So I'm going to be like the mean partner and like bring in the helicopter sounds or, you know, suggest a movie where there's like 75 helicopter scenes. It's like,
I want to chime in. Oh, keep going. And then I want to chime in. Go ahead.
So my thing is like, we who have complex PTSD, we need to learn what our triggers are. For me, my trigger, to be completely honest with you, is my daughter. And why she's a trigger is that when I was a child, okay, so she, you know how a 14-year-old can talk back. You ever heard of this before? Is this new to you? No. Have you ever had kids say, no, that's not right. And they know everything. Has that ever happened to you? Okay. So that happens to me on the daily. Right. And so when I was young, when I did that to my mother, she reached across and just smacked me right in the face. Okay. Yeah. So that's how she handled it. So when my daughter now, I've done a lot of work on my complex PTSD. So for those who know adverse childhood experience checklists, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, that's the one where like if you score a 7 or higher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, if you score 4, you're there's some issues. If you score 7, you might be doing drugs and be in jail. I score 9 out of 10 on that. Okay. So my thing is like, and I didn't realize that because that checklist, that research, that trauma research did not come out until late 90s. And then it didn't really get out to the masses until the 2000s. So everyone's like, Leanne, you're a psychologist. Why didn't you know that? I said, we didn't call it trauma. We just called it a shitty childhood, right? We didn't call it that. So when my daughter does this to me and I'm trying to be the best mom I can, I'm like, you know, doing all the things. I got into life coaching because I was working way too much at the university. And I needed to figure out how I could get out of working 70 hours a week and be a parent. And so I left the university because I needed to have more work-life balance. So I've been doing the life coaching, getting my trauma work, hypnotherapy, EMDR, all the things, shaman, there's, you know, with yoga, all the things, Wim Hof, cold baths, really working on myself. And then my daughter's like, but let me, you know, she's like offering up lots of circumstances and until I work on my trauma, I'm flipping my lid every time because I'm in my head. It took me some work and some therapy. In my head, what I figured out was, you don't understand what I've been through, and I'm working really hard to heal myself. And you don't. And then you know, my therapist said, Leanne, and you know, I of course she doesn't know what your childhood was like. She didn't live that. She's gotten her own. And then you know, she's adopted and. And so I'm like, well, I don't know what her life would have been if she was with her birth mother. I'm sure it would have been fine. We're friends on Facebook and she's a wonderful, I've never met her, but she's a wonderful lady and loves that I'm raising her child. But my thing is like, dang it. I got a smack in the face and I'm like trying to hold myself together, you know? So she offers up these circumstances and I'm now to the point where I don't flip my lid. But what happened before is like, my heart was going boom, 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 boom. Like, so I'm not reacting from the trigger. But then you got to get to the point where you're physiologically not like, I'm still like physiologically hijacked, right? Yeah. Does that make sense? So what were you going to say?
Well, I think one of the important things that we should get to, like, I thought maybe we had a distinction in triggers and how we define triggers. I think what it might actually be is a distinction in responsibility and kind of what that means. So like when you ask like, well, is your daughter responsible for her trigger? I actually say yes, but okay. Hear me out. The all reason right. I say yes is that like we're all going to have things that trigger us, that have traumatized us. We can't go back in time and undo it. So now we like have this gift from the past, kind of a sucky gift. Sometimes gifts suck. But anyways, we have this gift from the past. Now we are responsible for what we do with it. And I remember specifically talking to my daughter and she's like, well, I want to go play with her favorite cousin. They have two dogs. One is a big old huge golden doodle and the other is a little yappy dumb dog. Can't remember. But she would want to
glorified go, cat. Basically. Yes, another glorified cat.
Just yeah. So awful. But she would want to go play with her cousins, but she couldn't because of this trigger, because of this traumatic event. And so have you ever read the book Radical Responsibility? Yeah, Radical Responsibility by Fleet Mall. Have you ever read that?
No, I haven't.
It's an awesome book. My wife hated it, but I loved it. But the thing for me is if my daughter is responsible for her trigger, she has power to change it. If she can look at it and be like, this is mine. If I don't like the results that I'm creating, what can I do? What can I change about it? And I'll share a similar story to yours. My childhood wasn't great. When I did that test, I can't remember what I scored, but the guy that came and taught us about it, he's like, I'm really impressed that you became a high school principal. Like most people that score at this level, a lot of times they turn to drugs, sex, like anyways, I have a child. He'd probably prefer if I didn't use his name, but he was struggling with bedwetting and he wanted to change and he wouldn't go to sleepovers. Didn't like doing some of the things. And like bedwetting is one of those things that like, we could say, well, you're not responsible for that because you can't control that. The problem is if you can't control that, you are at the mercy to that circumstance. And I want to empower my kids. Anyways, we were like, well, we can, and this is where my triggers came up. My wife is like, well, let's get one of those alarms. And I'm like, we are not doing the alarm thing because my memory, so bedwetting, typically if your kid struggles with bedwetting, either you or your spouse did like it.
Oh, I did not know that.
Is hereditary. I struggled till I was probably 10 or so. And I distinctly remember, I don't necessarily remember the alarm going off, but I remember getting yanked out of my bed by my ear.
Oh my goodness.
And being smacked and just being yelled at, like, how can you sleep through this? What is wrong with you?
That's not how we recommend, we as behavior analysts recommend using the alarm. Just FYI.
Yeah. So like, I was like, we are not doing this. And that was my own trigger.
Right.
Anyways, we bought this book, Dr. Paul Jenkins. He's also a parenting life coach. Anyways, his book is all about like how to help your child reprogram their mind so that when the alarm goes off, you lovingly, you don't rip them out by their ear, which, well, that happened. I'm glad it happened to me so that I could do it better with my child. But we don't need to talk about all that.
Oh, basically, can I respond to that?
Well, yeah, just one second. Basically, okay, though, the thing that I believe, and this is kind of from my own experience, and I'm not a doctor in this at all, but when we can find ways to take responsibility, it doesn't mean that we like crappy stuff happened to us in the past and we don't like take responsibility for someone else's actions, but we do take responsibility for, hey, moving forward, this is the result that I want to create. Now, how do I get there? So go ahead.
Right. So I think part of the reason that we're talking about, I think I totally understand what you're saying. And I think, but one of the things that I want to kind of respectfully disagree about is Vietnam veterans, Gulf War veterans, veterans from Afghanistan, those of us who've been through sexual assault, those of us, we did not ask for those circumstances. And not only that, so I think you have to be really, really careful, because you might want to do a trigger warning on this one, because anybody who's been physically assaulted, sexually assaulted, had to go to war, and the government told them to go to war, they did not choose their circumstance. So what they got was a circumstance that somebody else placed upon them. Okay.
They did not want.
Right. Yes. And not only that, I think the difference is, because of the amount of trauma that sexual assault, killing people, if you've been raped, if you have somebody in your family murdered, some of the really, whether you've been beat, even emotional, some of the most traumatized people I see are people who have been emotionally abused. Physical abuse went away for me. I'm telling you, I feel like what people who've been emotionally abused and battered by their parents, unless they get work on that, the difference is, I can do a thought model about my triggers. That's one thing. But when you have complex PTSD, you actually need to get serious professional help, sometimes inpatient. That's why we have veterans facilities that do EMDR. They have places where people go and get intensive therapy, because it is not about changing thoughts about what happened before. You cannot do that. It is deep. I have been working on myself for 5 years on just deep into complex PTSD. So it's like hypnotherapy. So are you familiar with EMDR?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I would really suggest that your listeners, if they have these, this is a big thing for me, since I didn't know my trauma. Three books I really recommend. One, The Body Keeps the Score. Don't ask me who the author is. I never know the authors. There is another one that calls What Happened to You. It's actually with Oprah. And I know some people don't like Oprah, but you'll get over Oprah, because she has a really good neurobiologist. And then the other one is called What My Bones Know. And that's by Stephanie Fu. I read that one just recently. So if you want to understand what is the process by which somebody who has complex PTSD, what is the process by which you heal yourself? It's really important that we as coaches and care providers. So the trauma training we got from Life Coach School, it was a little overview. But if you, for like me, if you've experienced complex PTSD, and you say, hold on a second, what is the healing process? Let me just tell you, it is a marathon. It is not a sprint, and it's tough work. You've got to look at yourself. You've got to go into deep stuff, because that stuff stays locked. And a lot of people say, forget it. I don't want to do it. I want to lock it inside. And you know what? Those people that lock it inside, guess what? Guess who gets that? Their kids. And this is my big thing. This was what my podcast, when it comes out, our teachers are doing that on our kids at school. They're projecting their trauma. And I know you have another call. So here's what I want to say. One more thing. The other one is, there are alternative therapies that work. So one of my other favorite books is Why Woo Woo Works. And the reason why I like that book is because I'm a researcher, and all of us are like, nah, that's crystals and all this alternative stuff. Let me tell you, everything's energy. Everything is energy.
Yes.
And so a lot of the treatment for trauma and PTSD, we need to kind of go outside the box, not just look at some of the research-based stuff, but there's some other things like crystals, like sound baths, like yoga, that can heal, and really helped heal me. I'm not done. I've got a long journey on this whole thing. But anyway, that's all I wanted to say. So I think that's our differences. It's like you're kind of talking about referring back to maybe, I don't want to say they call them minor traumas or mini traumas, or I'm not a trauma expert. I'll just tell you that right now. I'm a trauma expert in my own body, but that's not my field of psychology, by the way. So thank you for letting me say that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's perfect. So here's what I want to add, man. I can't go to my next call late. So if we have to come to a part two of this someday, we totally can.
Perfect.
So one of the things while I was studying about trauma, I'll be real honest with you. Some of the coaches that are out there doing trauma trainings, I don't like what they have to offer. I feel like they are perpetuating a victim mentality and that they are disempowering the person because their trauma now becomes an excuse and a limiting factor in their life that then causes them to not create the results that they want. Mm. And I will tell you, so
I totally get your vibe there. I've seen, yes.
And I'll tell you one thing that people assume, like I'm a white dude, I was a high school principal. Like people just assume that my life is all put together and that my past was perfect. Like I suffered physical, emotional, mental abuse from my parents. Mom, if you're listening to this, I love you. But, and I don't know, I've talked to some people about this, whether I was raped or molested, like it's up to semantics.
Right.
But by a babysitter. The thing that I would say, the thing that inspires me the most about being a life coach and what I've learned about in all of my teaching and all my practice and all my certifications, when we can take responsibility for the results that we create. And I take issue with the model sometimes because I think there's a part of the model, like you were talking about, sometimes the trigger happens and without a thought, we dive into the emotion, the feeling. Those are subconscious neural pathways. And they are thoughts, but they're not conscious thoughts. And for me, when we can be responsible for our results, and that's why when I talk about like, hey, your triggers are yours, because most of the parents that I work with, like they have minor triggers, but rather than avoiding your teen and avoiding things, I suggest, no, like claim them, own them, realize, no, this is mine and this is my work to do. It doesn't mean I'm responsible for the knucklehead that gave me this trigger.
Right.
It means I'm responsible for what I do with it now.
I think it's semantics. I think what you're saying is, I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is, it's no matter if you've had trauma or not, your job is to still show up in emotional adulthood versus emotional childhood. And you as the emotional adult are responsible for your healing. So if am I correct? Like so I'm not saying you caused me trauma, therefore I'm going to be messed up the rest of my life. I'm saying I was traumatized, but I, Leanne Hawken, am responsible for my healing. I can't put my healing
in anyone else's hands.
No, so that's what you're saying. You're not saying you're responsible for your triggers. You're responsible for your healing so that you don't act from your triggers. Is that a better way to say it?
Yeah. And I would add to that, that if you don't want to heal, if like I have people in my family that they're not going to change. They don't want to heal. Yeah.
No, I have them in my family too. They lock it down. Lock it down. Yeah.
And for me, like I am going to love you no matter what. But for me personally, like I want to build a multi-million dollar business. I want to help hundreds of thousands of mothers. I can't do that if I don't address my triggers, my trauma, right, and do my healing. And right, we live in a world that it will help you stay stuck forever. And for me, like knowing that, no, this is mine, I'm responsible for that, that's just empowering for me.
Right.
Because now in the movie, like we just watched the new Flash the other day. It was awesome, by the way. But now I'm the hero to save myself instead of waiting for the past to change or someone else to change. My
issue is when we have teachers who choose not to heal and then they're projecting it on our youth that they're teaching. So you don't have to change, teacher, but because you're not healing, you are vomiting your trauma on a kid who's probably yeah. already traumatized. And that's what has to change for me.
And then it becomes generational at that point.
You do you and your families, but when you're teaching our youth or you're giving, or you're a psychologist or a social worker, anybody healing our youth, and you you vomit your trauma, that's when I have an issue. In fact, it makes me want to cry because I just, that is not, they did not ask for, you can't fix what happened to you in the past. But you can try to fix yourself so you're not vomiting the trauma on the kids and making perpetuating their own trauma cycles. That's the last thing I'm going to say.
Okay. We're going to have to do this again.
I love you, Ben. I love that we had this discussion. You are so amazing. I'm just so grateful for that you let us have this discussion, that you like cultivate. You're like, yes, I want to do it, Leanne. So thank you for that. And bless you for the work you're doing. Seriously.
Well,
it's God's
you.
Work, man. Seriously.
Thank you. If my audience wanted to connect with you, hear more about you, where could they go to find more about you?
That's interesting. I'm kind of in transition. They can find me on LinkedIn. It's under, you have to spell my name right. So look in the show notes, about how to spell my name. So I'm on LinkedIn and I'm on, but I don't really friend people on Instagram on my personal account. So I haven't gotten all my professional stuff set up. Because I'm too busy doing the work, but that's going to be happening pretty soon. So just find me on LinkedIn is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me.
Awesome.
And if you need access to good behavior analysts, I have a ton of them that I work with. So anybody needs to work with a behavior analyst, let me know.
Awesome.
So I have access to that.
And you'll be starting a podcast soon. So
yes,
when you launch your podcast, come back and be on mine and we'll promote
and then
your
you'll
podcast
be on mine
as well. Yeah.
Right? You'll be on mine?
Yours. Yes, definitely.
Sweet. Yay. I already had you listed. I put it in my intentions.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate
it. Thank you. I know you're late for your thing. So have an awesome week. Thank you for this, Ben. It means so much to me.
Yeah. Well, everyone listening, thank you for being here. Dr. Leanne is awesome. Not only is she a good friend, but she's just, as you can tell, she's so knowledgeable. So I'll put how to contact her if you would like in the show notes. And guys, come back next week. We'll have another awesome discussion, and I'll see y'all soon. Did you know that parents and teens all over the world are struggling? I believe that the most important thing that you can do in your teen's life is simply being an impactful parent, which means taking the time to understand what parenting traps are holding you back, and then taking that knowledge and using it to completely uplevel your parenting. This is why I've created a brand new quiz to help you better understand your own parenting traps. This quiz will help you pull back the curtain on your own parenting and gain some powerful insights so you can stop getting caught in the same old parent traps. This quiz will help you start being the parent of your dreams so you can finally create an impactful relationship with your teen. This quiz will take you less than 2 or 3 minutes, and it is completely free. If you want to take this quiz and better understand the traps that are keeping you stuck as a parent, go to benpewcoaching.com/parent-trap-quiz and get an insight into what is holding you back as a parent so you can completely uplevel your parenting. I'll see you soon.